Well, this is the moment. It has been quite clear for a couple of years now that innovation cycles are getting shorter. And it has been clear for even longer that Europe faces more and more competition from both the Far East and from the Far West, so to say. And the importance of investing in research has therefore never ever been higher. Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, we aren't making enough of the right investments yet. That is absolutely a fact. Our outlay is too small, and it's too concentrated on public spending, and worst of all, it is too fragmented. So in the spirit of never wasting a crisis, I'm here today to say that we are now firmly in a new era for ICT research in Europe. And the announcement of the FAT flagship initiative in 2009 marked the start of this new era. And the holistic approach of the digital agenda also keeps a firm focus on large-scale, long-term, federated research initiatives. The really important thing is the scale of the ambition. And the scale, by the way, is not unique to FAT. It applies to other work like our PPP for building the future internet. But FAT is no doubt the leader. With 100 million per flagship per year, 100 million euros, we can make a real difference. And at their core, I see the FAT flagships as our path to scientific leadership. They take a potential weakness of Europe, our division into 27 states, and turn it into a strength, one digital single market. And in that sense, FAT is a metaphor for what is best about the EU. But those flagships do more than that. They also foment the sort of breakthrough that has many positive spillover effects. For example, across the universities associated with them and through the sectors of our collaborators in fields like health and energy. And I'm pleased also that we have managed to build on what we are good at already, such as neuro-ICT, green-ICT, nanosciences and material sciences. And in that very domain, Europe has been home to four Nobel Prize winners in physics in the last 6 years. And I'm told, in fact, that you will be discussing breakthroughs in graphene from last year's winners and others. What next? Today's pilot, the six best-ranked proposals, are the most important step to the final two projects that will commence in 2013. They will have to prepare not only the scientific and research aspects, such as strategic research agendas, but equally important from my point of view, elaborate on the societal benefits they will bring. That is again the connection with the European citizen, the taxpayer, so to say, for we need money for just feeding the research, and then we need the taxpayer to be aware what's all about. And they will also have to build up governance and financial structures and commitment from key stakeholders. The flagships will boost the European research area by building a critical mass in their field. Imagine, on a larger scale and on a smaller scale. On a smaller scale, the sort of magnetic pull that an organization like CERN generates. Then we will really start to see the positive spillover to other public and private research institutions. New models of governance are called for. And while I don't want to go into technical guidance here, I want to stress that I'm looking forward to seeing you and how you propose to balance the opportunities and the risks. New risks may emerge along this exciting course. Unforeseen scientific barriers, austerity in public research support, trouble in coordination, new international competition. But let's use all of this as a motivation. And I know that many of you, like I myself, still remember the space race and the first man on the moon. And let's find more successes that we will remember, not just for a day, but forever. Now, it is a pleasure for me to invite each of the coordinators of the 6 FAT flagships, candidates, to give us a brief presentation of their project, and we want to be thrilled, so please come at stage.
Thank you. Yes. Would the 6 coordinators and their 4 university presidents please join us for a little presentation to you, and then you will give a presentation each to us. First of all, we have Professor Hans Leerach from the Max Planck Institute for Molecular Genetics, and his project is Medicine of the Future. What Commissioner Kroes is giving Professor Leerach is a certificate of excellence. Would you like to show it to the photographer, Professor? Oh, there are professors on both, photographers on both sides. Sorry.
Okay.
Those who follow will be able to follow this example of where to stand. And the object in the wooden box is a beautiful brass replica of the sort of solar compass that was used at the time of Christopher Columbus to navigate across the oceans. I don't know if it's a working model. I believe it is. And that symbolizes, of course, the 21st exploration of new fields of technology. Now, please, Professor Yari Kinneret from Chalmers University. And his president, Karin Markides, please. And Stephen Bishop from University College London, and David Price, the Vice Provost for Research at UCL. And and Switzerland, and indeed EPFL in Lausanne, features twice. So the next 2 presenters are Henry Markram for the Human Brain Project and Adrian Ionescu for Guardian Angels for a Smarter Planet. And I believe Patrick Abisher, the president, is here, EPFL president. Congratulations for your double coup. Yes. Yes. And last, but of course not least, is Professor Paolo Dario of the Scuola Superiore Sant'Anna, and his president or director, Maria Chiara Carozza. Now, if the university presidents would kindly step back down, we're going to hear from the coordinators. And this is where the choreography is cracking. No, What she say?
They have to stay.
Do they? The court. Anyway, I'd like to invite.
Sorry, there is one certificate still to be given to this gentleman. From EPFL, there were two.
There were two EPFL certificates. We thought there was just going to be one between two. And we'd like to have a collective picture. That's why you're all staying on the stage. Thank you. No. Sorry, Nelly, would you mind going down for the collective?
No,
would
have been. May I invite you for the picture?
Yeah. Gosh. And thank you very much. I think it's probably easiest, actually, if you all go down so you can see the presentations, except Hans Lehrach, who can stay up and, I hope, if the computer's working, give us his five-minute presentation.
Okay. 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 Sorry, I'm having slide problems.
It's already pre-on the screen.
Okay.
And you can see what you see on the screen.
Okay, thanks a lot. Okay, yeah, it's a pleasure to introduce to you our proposal, IT Future of Medicine. This is based on the fact that medicine is still, in some respects, in the stage of statistical medicine. We are not taking advantage of the information on the individual disease process, and we are convinced that this has to change, that we are approaching the era of a data-rich, computation-intensive medicine in which we trade off spending more money on generating data on large scale, on essentially genomics scale, and less money on drugs and on personnel in our health systems. This is maybe best illustrated by the development of the sequencing technique. We were involved in the Human Genome Project, which has been mentioned a few times already, a 10-year project costing $1 to $3 billion dollars to over 10 years to generate the first sequence of a human genome. During this period, the speed of sequencing has increased roughly proportional to Moore's law, the black stippled line. But since 2005 or so, the sequencing speed, the throughput of the new sequencing instruments has increased dramatically by a factor of 5 to 10 per year. So we are in a period in which we now are able to sequence multiple genomes on a single machine per run, while we could do a single genome basically 10 years ago using the techniques we had available then. Now this has a large economic importance. The developed countries, OECD and BRIC, spend will spend presumably $71 trillion over the next 10 years over healthcare if we succeed in moving 20% of that spending into a more data-rich, computation-intensive type of medicine. We've basically doubled the spending on ICT. The entire ICT market is only 1.5 trillion compared per year in the whole world, compared to 7 trillion for the healthcare. So this is most dramatically illustrated in the case of cancer. The US alone has spent hundreds of billions of dollars on cancer research since 1970s, the beginning of the war on cancer. Nevertheless, most common cancers are not, the survival is really not extended, so there are no improvements in the cure rates. The drugs which have been developed typically only work for a small fraction of the cases, so we spend very often 30,000 euros per patient to make 70 to 80% of the patients more sick than they were before, because the tumor is the only tissue in the patient which is not affected by the negative effects the drug has on the rest of the tissues of the patient. So this has a very strong IT component. We have as the sequencing speed, as the analytic cost drops more and more, the ICT component becomes limiting. If the sequencing gets cheaper by a factor of 5 or 10 per year and the computers get more powerful by a factor of 2 every 1.5 to 2 years, this obviously becomes more and more the dominated component, which will retard the development of this new medicine. Now, this consortium we have assembled has some fantastic groups in Europe, but also a large number of IT companies who see the enormous commercial potential in developing a new market of the size of the existing ICT market. So the goals of our flagship proposal is essentially to develop a virtual patient infrastructure, to develop integrated molecular, anatomical, physiological models of every person in the healthcare system, so any treatment can be optimized on the individual, with the individual, with the virtual patient following the individual through the healthcare from baby to old age. This, I think, will be has to be the future of medicine. Analytic techniques, computing become cheaper and cheaper. Personnel costs will continue to increase as more and more old people have to be taken care of by the fewer young people in Europe. And I think this development could stimulate buyers, better medicine, for less cost. It could stimulate economic activities on the large scale. And just as an anecdote, what we're doing in medicine at the moment is statistical medicine. If you transfer that to repairing a car, you are basically taking the spark plugs out of every red car and the battery out of every green car. And I'm convinced we can do a lot better than that in the future. Thanks.
Now, Professor Jari Kinaret from Chalmers University of Technology will talk about graphene science. Hope it works.
Okay, the flagship pilot on graphene-driven revolutions in ICT and beyond has the vision of creating a large focused research community that exploits the unique properties of graphene and related two-dimensional materials. The research will result in new innovations and boost economic growth. The pilot consortium consists of only 9 members: Chalmers, Universities of Manchester, Cambridge and Lancaster in the UK, the Italian National Research Council, the Catalan Institute of Nanotechnology, the Nokia Corporation, the AMO Corporation and the European Science Foundation. But already more than 70 academic and industrial partners have expressed interest to join the flagship. Graphene research has experienced explosive growth since graphene was isolated and characterized by Konstantin Novoselov and Andrei Geim in 2004, for which work they received the Nobel Prize last fall. The number of academic publications is increasing rapidly, as is the number of patents based on graphene, and there is no end in sight. This explosion in the research activity on graphene is motivated by the fact that graphene is the material that has most superlatives. It is the material that conducts electricity and heat best. It is the thinnest material. It is the most flexible material. It's a material that is 300 times stronger than steel. And all these superlative properties give rise to a number of applications, which I don't have time to describe in detail now, but you are welcome to come to our session tomorrow when we'll discuss applications in ICT, in materials, and energy and health in more detail. Graphene research in Europe is quite sizable. There are several European programs, both by the European Commission, but also by the European Science Foundation, but graphene research in Europe is fragmented. And the purpose of our flagship is to get rid of this fragmentation and create a coordinated research activity that provides synergies. Similar coordinated activities exist in other countries, most importantly perhaps Korea, that recently announced an investment of about $600 million on graphene research alone. So the international competition is strong, but I'm convinced that we can do quite well in that. And the reason why I'm convinced is that our scientific and technological quality is very high, perhaps best exemplified by our Scientific Advisory Council that features no fewer than 4 recent European Nobel Prize winners. In addition, we have the leading European theorist on graphene and representation from these coordinated efforts in Korea and in the United States. We are convinced that graphene and related two-dimensional materials will lead to qualitative changes in the lives of Europeans in the 21st century, in a way a new era of carbon. Graphene is truly a future technology that is rapidly emerging, and the purpose of the flagship, the ambition of the flagship, is to make sure that Europe is in the driving seat in this new technology. Thank you.
So, Stephen Bishop from University College London on the future ICT knowledge accelerator and crisis relief system.
Wait a minute, Peter. Okay. Thank you very much indeed. I'm presenting this project on behalf of over 300 collaborators who've worked so far on the project. As we know, FET came up with the idea to fund an Apollo-type project, but actually, rather than looking outwards to distant universes, many of my colleagues consider that our major challenges are firmly rooted here on Earth. Looking inwards, in fact, makes us more convinced that the way in which we live is in fact changing the variability in our environment. We see that our response to natural disasters is not as fast nor as efficient as we might hope. We find that the systems that that really determine our lives today are highly connected, and sometimes that leads to multiple failures. So, given all this, how can we determine these connections to prevent multiple failures and cascades of failures in our systems? Even if the initial disaster is a natural one, how can we understand the likely economic and social implications? We also see today that conflict is on the increase rather than alliances. However, on a positive note, connectivity brings opportunity. We have the potential to utilize data, in fact our data, everyone's data, to develop new technologies. But again, there's a question of how we do this to advance innovation, and how can we do it in a manner so that one's individual and cultural identity is preserved. We believe that the Futurist Flagship Project will answer these questions. It will bring together the fields of IT, ICT, social science, and complexity science so that we can manage our global society in a sustainable manner. It will do this by developing global ICT systems that are socially interactive. Hence, the project is both the future of ICT and a futurist project. A bit of detail, the so-called Living Earth Simulator will combine theoretical models with supercomputer simulations with reality mining and experimental approaches such as games and web experiments. The crisis observatories will act as early warning systems in areas such as finance, health, and energy. Decision arenas will allow for disaster management and contingency planning, or indeed strategically, to help our policymakers find adaptable solutions to the grand challenges that lay ahead. And these we have already mentioned some. Of course, in the long term, we'd also like to develop participatory platforms which will support the integration of diverse knowledge and promote social, economic, and political inclusion. Finally, the Innovation Accelerator itself will help people from industry find the very best available people and methods. So in this way, we believe we can create an innovation economy leading to a speedy transition of ideas from research to retail. Is Europe ready for this, I hear you ask? Well, yes, we are. There is a long list of top-class scientists ready to engage in this research endeavor. These come from the leading research university powerhouses and at least four supercomputing centers. We have links to many existing European projects and, of course, wider international collaboration. We also have non-academic support from businesses and individuals. This collective group envisages that the flagship will bring about technological advances in computer science, also improvements in our understanding of social interactions, and finally societal benefits in being able to create a more resilient society. Therefore, they come together because they wish to unite in a large-scale science-driven effort towards our visionary goal. Thank you very much.
Next, we'll hear from Henry Markram of EPFL, who gave us such a brilliant keynote speech at FET 09 in Prague on his Human Brain Project.
Tom.
Good morning. The goal of the Human Brain Project is to simulate the human brain in health and disease and to develop new brain-like technologies. Now, to do that, what we are going to build is the world's first simulation facility that would allow researchers across the world and across all disciplines to get together and systematically build the brain according to its biological details and principles. We will also develop the most advanced and new information technologies and informatics technologies that will, for the first time, allow us to gather and bring together all the knowledge that has been generated over the past century and in the future on the brain and on its fundamental principles. We will develop the technology that allows us to synthesize and integrate this data according to the fundamental principles of the brain, which will allow us to build the brain according to these principles. We will build the first high-performance computing design center in the world. This system will allow us to design and customize and monitor supercomputers that will eventually be able to be capable of simulating the human brain. We will build the first and the ultimate medical facility that will federate medical data from around the world, from hospitals, and this will allow patients' individual data to be compared to all the other data to give a much more accurate diagnosis of individual disorders. We'll be able to use this individual data to do individual simulations and to ultimately provide personalized medicine. There are over 2 billion people on the planet affected by mental disorders, costing Europe alone $800 billion per year. We will build the first neuromorphics facility in the world that is capable of exporting neural architectures. No imagining neural architectures, exporting neural architectures that we can use to design and generate any number of new neuromorphic computer chips. We even aim to develop neuromorphic computer chips that will help us to simulate the brain itself. We will also develop the first robotics facility, neurorobotics facility, where for the first time we will actually build a brain that would allow any robot to adapt and learn about its body and learn how to adapt in any environment. And finally, we will develop the world's first virtual or rapid prototyping facility where through simulations, through the brain simulations and virtual instruments tested and designed and customized, we'll be able to develop individual and customized neuroprosthetic devices at a much faster scale than the decades it takes today to generate any of these devices. There is a core consortium of about 13 universities, but this is leading with a huge interest from universities across the world, not only in Europe, but centered in Europe, and a massive circle of industry. Thank you.
Now we're going to invite Adrian Ionescu, also from EPFL, to talk about guardian angels for a smarter planet.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I will present the Guardian Angel for a Smarter Life project. This project is the result of a collaborative effort between 28 partners, leading universities, research institutes, and companies in the field of medical devices, energy, and semiconductor. Well, the first important question to ask is, what's the definition of the Guardian Angel? And for us, a Guardian Angel is a zero-power smart autonomous system that features in a combined way sensing, computation, and communication beyond human aptitudes. But more than that, this system has the unique ability to harvest different kinds of energy in the environment. And we call this zero power. So the zero power is the ability of the system to harvest in dynamic environment different sources of energy like solar, thermal, vibration, electromagnetic, and power up, based on this energy, the smart Guardian Angel system. What's the science drive beyond this? If today you look at one of the most used devices, the iPhone, and you'll try to power it up with scavenger available in state of the art, you will face almost 5 orders of magnitudes, a factor of 10 to 5 in terms of the energy that is needed to power up the function of the system. And if you want to add more function like sensing or like emotional interfaces, this will become impossible. So what we want to address is really this gap of energy. And how we address it is really working on the two sides. First, to develop energy efficient technologies, and second, energy harvester. And with both approaches, we'll gain 2 to 3 orders of magnitude to meet in the middle and enable the Guardian Angel system that will become a smart personal companion. And the role of this companion is to actively assist humans from infancy to old age, to be autonomous, straightforward in use, non-intrusive. There should be smart, controllable, secured, and personalized. Well, in order to make this a reality, we'll have to develop the zero-power technology platform that will combine the energy-efficient technologies, the energy harvesting, storage, and green batteries. But we'll have also to develop zero-power design, smart design, new software and communication algorithms. And this will result in 3 generations of Guardian Angel. The first one will be the physical Guardian Angel, which is practically a network at zero-power smart sensor deployed around your body to monitor vital biological signal. In a second generation, this will be extended to the environmental Guardian Angel that will monitor environmental signal for danger prevention. And in the third generation, we'll add on top of that emotional interfaces that could have tremendous application, but one that is obvious, for instance, is to give to paraplegic control of their environment. Now, I can also explain you what's the impact on the society and life, because these devices will preserve human health and improve the quality of life for all categories of age, will make our environment more interconnected and smart, more energy efficient and safe. With this project, we'll give to Europe a leading role in zero-power novel technologies and will enable a stronger role of manufacturing. We strongly believe that this will create new opportunities for employment and for business in Europe. And now, the time has come. I have the pleasure to introduce you, for the first time, the movie of Guardian Angel Project.
In an increasingly active world, imagine personal companions always at your side. You cannot see them, but they are taking care of you at each stage of your life. These are nanotechnology devices that you can choose to rely on in total confidence. As you take care of your loved ones, these high-tech guardian angels contribute to your well-being day and night. Nanosensors. So small, we don't even know they are there. They measure the vital signs of our body and communicate through an interface on a bracelet or cell phone to ensure our safety and health. These devices are autonomous. They take their energy from the immediate environment,
the sun, vibrations in movement, or even changes in temperature. Integrated into the fabric of our clothing, for example, this technology is as easy to use as slipping on a pullover. Simple and intuitive, guardian angel devices protect the most fragile among us. They help parents take care of a child's needs and be there, no matter what happens. A technology that guides us through all stages of life. By bringing more security to seniors, they improve autonomy and offer the possibility of a higher quality of life. In the future, these intelligent accessories will show us the emotional state of those around us in order to better communicate. They will be useful during meetings by analyzing the attention of participants. By interacting with your environment, these devices indicate how tired you are when you need it most. They can communicate with your vehicle and others on the road to guarantee your safety. They are precious aids in an ever-changing, fast-paced world where professionals have to remain calm and control their emotions. They also protect those who work in dangerous environments. In order for the Guardian Angels project to become a reality, European universities, research centers, and Europe's high-tech industry have decided to join forces. They will develop state-of-the-art technologies to face this scientific challenge. By becoming a leader in this domain of the future, Europe will make these devices accessible for all. The Guardian Angels project announces a new world of applications that respect the environment and ensure the well-being of our loved ones for a smarter life.
Thank you.
And as we know, the final project is robot companions for citizens, for which Professor Paolo Dario from the Scuola Superiore Sant'Anna is going to talk.
The video summarized what we want to do with our project. And specifically, we have two goals in our initiative. First is to develop a new industry in Europe more than 100 years after chemistry, which was the last one. Then we want to face the most important threats to Europe's welfare and economic performance in the long run. These challenges might share a common answer that are robot companions. Robot companions will be sentient machines which will extend the active independent lives of citizens, bolster the labor force, provide key services in our businesses and in our cities, aid us to cope with natural and man-made disasters, and support human capabilities and experience. Sentient machines are a key enabling technology for a new sustainable welfare. And only robotics can actually answer the challenges we've been talking about, because robotics do things in the real world. As the 1,000 robots at work at this very moment in our economy, robotics provides real solutions to real problems. Sentient is what living minds do. It is the integration of perception, cognition, emotion, action, with our awareness of self, others, and environment. And we can create a new kind of robots. They will be machines we can trust in terms of safety, security, and reliability. 150 years after Charles Darwin, we are going to extend the search into the workings of minds, that is, brains plus bodies. And decades of research have taught us that we can't understand minds without bodies. In our project, technology development is embedded into science because the core of our effort is creating models of the brain and body unicum. And this is an extremely powerful discovery engine. And it is also a just as powerful technology development engine. So our project will not just produce amazing science, we want to deliver useful technologies right from the beginning. What is special about robotics is that robotics is inclusive. So ICT, engineering, neuroscience, material science, tissue engineering, energy production, scavenging and management, industrial design, and also, very important, humanities and social sciences. And concrete examples of this inclusive robotics are the explorer, the collaborator, the suite, and the body augmentation system. Those are just examples of the kind of deliverables that we expect to generate within the project. And we envision a strongly inclusive project. So we set the ambitions, starting from a core consortium, and we propose a roadmap. But we will allocate the resources in a competitive fashion to anyone who wants to share the same ambitions and contribute. We will make research into ethical issues and social impacts, and we will closely monitor how the technology is tentatively introduced in society to avoid failures. By choosing robot companions, Europe commits to developing a disruptive technology that will help ensure a new sustainable welfare for European society in the long run. More than 2,500 years ago, in the forecourt of the Temple of Apollo in Delphi, was inscribed the aphorism, "Know thyself," perhaps the founding commandment of Western thought and humanism. By helping understand more about the human mind, this project is also a major step forward in our long quest for self-knowledge. In a way, for Europe, it is an opportunity that follows logically from its tradition, values, and history. Thank you.